Chair Dawson.
Here.
Vice Chair Wilbur.
Here.
Director Miller.
Here.
Director Wilkins.
Here.
Director Jacobson.
Here.
Director Walsh.
Here.
And Director Kelly is absent. We have four.
Okay, and approval of the consent agenda, which includes the minutes and the financial statements for February.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. No opposition. Consent agenda is approved. Public comments. Anybody online? There's nobody here, I don't believe. Anybody online wish to make a comment?
There's nobody online.
Nobody online either. Okay. We will move straight to old business, general manager appraisal. Okay.
Thank you. So I'm going to, you guys all have this. I saw it in the packet, so I'll go through it fairly quickly. Just kind of highlight kind of the high level things I noticed about it. Overall, the general story is that the general managers met or exceeded your expectations in pretty much all the categories, and through, I think everybody agrees, it's kind of been some fairly difficult transition time here going from Cook Inlet up to the North Slope. So on operational performance, you kind of have the bar, which is a summary of the everything down below, between the meet and exceeded. I think the important things in that category is, you know, the progress we've made dealing with the PHMSA issues and effective dealing with the various disruptions we had over this last year, including the Dalton Highway incident and the National Guard incident, which was noted by the board members. On financial sustainability and affordability, again, the same thing kind of towards the higher end. With comments focused on, we had a tough year financially. Revenue was below, lower than expected. And looking back here, we're behind the curve, obviously, a little bit. And didn't have any kind of a rate increase, even though we had a warm season and lower than expected demand for the period that was being evaluated. On operational efficiency and workforce, again, a similar rating in between the meet and exceed standard. I think that probably the most important one out of that category I thought was the how staff, we did the union decertified. I think that was a pretty strong reflection of a good thing going on at IGU in terms of employee perspective. On community engagement and growth, pretty much consistent rating of, you know, does GM does well with legislative engagement, community presence, through the chamber, FEDC, advocacy with legislatures, etc. Self-evaluation, acknowledge gaps honestly. The board felt that the GM's self-evaluation was consistent with how they've observed things to have gone on throughout the year. Now, I'll mention one thing there, maybe just, you know, we had this situation where we had two people come on very close to the evaluation. I don't know if in the future maybe we should pick up the people who leave, you know, before they go, or do something so we don't have two people out of the board who are, you know, making evaluations with basically pretty limited track record. So overall, GM performance rating was, again, between the exceed and meet and exceed expectations. And again, acknowledgement that it was a pretty difficult year, I would say. This transition in North Slope has certainly been probably the most difficult, challenging period that I've been involved in IGU, which is from the start of it, at least in my history and the way I've looked at things. It's been hopefully won't be having that level of turmoil and difficulty on an ongoing basis going forward. So doing a good job in a pretty difficult climate over the last year. Hopefully it will get better for things, a little bit easier to deal with logistically. Moving on to Forum 2, the leadership competencies. The board in general was supportive of good forward decision making, anticipating tasks, dealing with difficulties going forward. Was on the higher end of that, towards the exceeding standard. Board relations to communications. The board felt GM does a good job with communication. And keeping a good boundary between what she brings to the board and what she deals with on her own, and keeping the board informed as part of that process. And getting input from the board when appropriate and necessary, but not getting down too far into the weeds. Financial stewardship, the board in general felt that doing a good job around cash management, controlling costs, and that, you know, again, we've made reasonable progress in terms of maintaining financial stability. Obviously, the one thing noted here was, you know, customer growth going into the future has been problematic, and you know, is obviously an area that needs some, hopefully, a bit of a turnaround of where we've been, which maybe if there's a silver lining to this Iran situation, that might provide some of that. External relationship and advocacy, again, towards the high end of the scale. Comments about how the GM does a good job, particularly with the legislative regulatory community settings. Some concern expressed by one board member about what our relationship with Fedco may be, or the GM's relationship with Fedco, and how deep that should be or not be. On team leadership and organizational development, the board in general felt she's doing a good job not only leading the organization, but giving credit to other people in the agency that are supportive and providing the backdrop for the GM to succeed, and giving credit where it's due in that department. So judgment under pressure, again, was on the higher end of the scale. The board noted the various kind of more disruptive issues we've had, a couple of this year, in terms of supply disruption, North Slope transition, etc. Overall leadership was on the higher end of the scale, and just consistent with what I said earlier, that the board feels the GM has had a pretty strong performance across the whole range of issues that she's presented with at ITU. So that's my summary.
Okay, thank you, Zach. Any concerns or questions from the board concerning the general manager's evaluation? Sorry?
Chair, I don't, not concerns really, but just a couple of points.
Sure.
First of all, very polished. I was comparing it to last year's, and I noticed that the comments were summarized very nicely in this report. Last year, the comments were just kind of listed. Although maybe some granularity might be a little nice to kind of not be too generalized, some of the comments are a little bit general. And then I was wondering, because it's mentioned twice, so under Goal 4, Community Engagement and Growth, Customer Growth and Service Line Installations, well, how much of that is actually in her control was a question I had, because that's one where she did not meet expectations. So I'm just kind of, it's just a question I want to throw out there. Under the board comments for goal number 3, I felt it was pretty vague that workforce development, under the board comments, workforce development was noted as progressing, but in need of more consistency and follow through. I don't even know what that means. One member noted moderate concern about the Titan plant direction, and I wonder if that fit in that operational efficiency and workforce development, maybe. And then on page 10, the priority goals for the coming year, were those the GM's priorities, or are these our priorities?
Those are not my priorities. Those are the everything that's in this report is suggestions by the board.
So these are priorities that came from our comments?
I think so. I didn't get page 10.
Page 10 of the packet.
Oh, okay. That's what threw me off. I was looking at the rating.
Where did those? I'm just curious where those goals for the coming year came from.
I think those came from the board.
Mm-hmm. Just synthesized from our comments.
And there was a section we had somewhere where you had the board laid out goals for the next year.
Priority goals for the
next year. Okay.
I think maybe what we ought to do, Sherry, is kind of take your concerns forward and work them into next year's evaluation. Because I think that this year's evaluation, of course, is over with. I think most of the board, you know, has a very good feeling about Elena in all categories. I agree with you, this is better than last year, but I do think we could do it better. So maybe, you know, when it gets closer to evaluation time next year, we could have a short conversation about, you know, how to work it.
Right, so if we did come up with a goal for financial sustainability, continue seeking financial solutions for IGU is just extremely vague, so maybe specific strategies to reduce rate pressure, grants, customers, et cetera, connections. And then we say maintain cost discipline, so maybe have some actual attainable, measurable goals like track and report costs for NCF drivers.
You tell me.
I just don't remember coming. I apologize. I don't remember coming up with these goals.
I think they were...
They were goals, Jack, weren't they?
Eric has been a
step before. That Elena set?
I don't remember. What I was going to say, I thought they were goals that were kind of developed by whoever would put the package together. And then the board essentially... You know, I don't know if there's any vote on it or not, but it was presented to the board in that standpoint and generally accepted. I don't think that the board itself actually developed those goals in some formal fashion, but maybe did.
So Elena did a self-evaluation that included some goals, am I correct?
So, if I may, the goals that you see on page 10 originated from the compilation of the things that the board, individual board members have put in the specific section of the form that Erica's gonna pull out. You might remember this portion of the form that says GM goals for the coming year. So whatever you guys entered in there got put into the different categories, safety and reliability, financial sustainability, etc. And that's what is here. If you are remembering what happened last year, the very last step of this evaluation last year included the presentation of a strategic plan, and that was my responsibility to then compile what the board has said is our priority goals, add to them my goals, and then that's the portion where we all agree those are the goals for the upcoming year.
Okay, sure.
I have one other thing just to add. In terms of the, you know, going to the summary over the individual comments, I spoke with Elaine about that, and we both felt it was the better way to go forward with it, just because you know, kind of evens everything out and kind of the idea with what my involvement was to reflect the consensus of the board, which is a little easier doing with the summary than just listing individual comments.
So I would think that, you know, with individual input from board members to establish the priorities, that opens the discussion for the entire board to say, yes, these are the priorities that we want to focus on this year or not, and we can massage that. But at least we have individual input as far as what directors are feeling are important.
So, Jeff, you're suggesting that we kind of work with the general manager to establish some goals?
Right, I think these goals are not the board's goals. They're individual directors' goals. So what we need to do is make sure that there's consensus on the board that these indeed are our goals.
Yeah. Sherry?
I'm just participating now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, you have that quiz in Sherry. You look like that.
I thought we'd gone through that process, to tell you the truth, but maybe I got it wrong.
I'm a newbie, so yeah. I claim ignorance.
Okay, well, no wrong question. So, any other questions? Jeff?
Just on page 13 under board comments regarding relationships with vendors, the last sentence says, one member advised caution regarding deeper involvement with Fedco, suggesting the GM's time is better directed elsewhere. And I'm not sure what the concern is there, but with Fedco now becoming the arbiter for this part of Alaska, they are an economic engine driver that could have goals and things that would support our mission to expand natural gas to customers. So I don't know if there's another problem that they're concerned about, but having a close relationship with the ARDR, which is oftentimes kind of like a standard approval of a project moving forward for grants and things like that, is important.
Gary?
Oh, thank you. That's my comment. I'm concerned, and I want to make sure that I express that concern to the board. Elena is vice president of Fedco. I hope that she doesn't become president of Fedco board of directors. Her time is spent elsewhere better. And history will tell you that back 25 years ago, that the arteries were taken apart and put back together. And they were found to be nothing more than a jobs factory across Alaska. So I suspect years from now that will be what happens to these artists. They don't produce much of anything other than another meeting and a request for outside funding. I remember that quite clearly. So it'll seek its own course. But I don't have any problem with Lena being on the Fedco board. I do have an issue and hope that she will hear this, that she shouldn't be spending her time with Fedco. She should be spending her time with IGUs.
Okay. Well, anything else, Jeff? Okay. And Sherry, you just got that little smile on your face, so I'm assuming you have nothing else.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Then we will move forward here. The authorization of capital expenditures for storage site, please. General Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're now on page 15 of the packet, and management is requesting authorization for two items. Both of these items can be covered with this fiscal year capital budget. However, we need board approval because each of these individually exceeds $150,000, which is my approval authority. One of these items is adding an additional boiler at storage site 3. We have four boilers there currently. Their job is to warm up the glycol that then warms up the liquefied natural gas and makes the liquid back into a gas. This winter, during the sustained period of cold and at a time when our two largest capacity customers were burning, we identified the need for additional redundancy with those boilers. So we're asking the board to authorize $290,000 to install an additional one. When storage site 3 was designed, it was designed with a 7 boiler capacity, and four were installed at the beginning, and now as we're growing and we're increasing our demand, it is time to add one. And then the second one is also at storage site 3. The storage site is ran automatically by Aviva. There's a lot of automation that's in it that tells
valves when to open and to close, and when to close, and it tells the system how to run, in addition to our controllers obviously making adjustments to it as needed. We need to change that server, and the server itself is about $40,000. It's not the expensive item. The more expensive item is the fact that the
62.
Oh, okay. So more than that. The more expensive item is the software that is running on this on the server. The software is an older version of the software, and we need to upgrade to the newer version of the software. So combined, these items will cost about $275,000. Now, for each of these items, we are looking at funding that is different than the capital budget. However, even if we were to identify, say, a grant, we would still need board authorization to make these expenses. And we decided as a management team to receive get board approval. We will prioritize having both of these expenses paid from other sources. We have included all three boilers in a State of Alaska capital request, and that is a part of getting the system ready to transfer UAF from uninterruptible to a firm customer. So should that come through, which it has more chances now than it did back when we first applied because of the potential of increased revenues because of the cost of oil at the state level. And then the server upgrades, we're getting some clarification from PHMSA. PHMSA launched a grant now. We have been successful in getting about $90,000 of that grant funding. We are unsure whether or not the server upgrades are an eligible expenditure. It could be, but it's not very clear, so we're seeking clarification. So with that, we'll pursue external funding for both items, but we request that board authorization to proceed because we believe that regardless of funding source, both of these are necessary before we go into next winter.
Okay, on page 16 is a recommended motion. I'd like a motion and a second, please.
For purposes of discussion, I make the motion. Joan, if you read it out. I move to authorize the general manager to execute contracts for, one, an additional boiler at storage site number 3 in an amount not to exceed $290,000, and, two, a server and Aviva software upgrades at storage site number 3 in an amount not to exceed $275,000, procured in accordance with the IGU procurement manual.
Second. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Discussion, Derek?
How old are the boilers?
We're not replacing the boilers. They're 2019, so
they'll continue to be in use?
Correct. They will all continue to be in use. We're just adding ones to capacity. Add capacity and redundancy.
Okay. And then I'm not familiar with the capital budget or what is in the capital budget or what the board approved previously or what that looks like.
Sure.
Just kind of getting a general feel for what that means. You know.
So in the most recent capital budget, we have two types of capital budgets, construction and non-construction capital budget. The non-construction capital budget was $2.4 million. $1.2 million of that was to purchase three new LNG trailers. The rest were for various projects, mostly at storage sites, some at this office. We don't typically present the capital budget on a line item by line item, though we do have it on a line item by line item separately. But every time any individual item costs more than my procurement authority, I come in front of the board, even if they were if the expenditure was included in the approved budget. So say the trailers, we knew that we were going to spend $1.2 million for the trailers, still board approval is expressly required.
Sorry, just one follow-up question. So when we go through our FY 27 budget proposal, which I think we're probably going to do in the next month or so, mm-hmm. will you present a single operating budget, or will it be a operating budget and a capital budget, or just trying to make sure I understand kind of what that looks like?
We present the operating budget, and then we present a narrative on the capital budget. And we can go as deep as board requires. This is just what we've presented in the past.
Thank you.
Okay, Gary?
Still on page 16, budget bullet number one. Is there a fiscal impact by transferring UAF from interruptible to a firm customer?
I would call it a positive fiscal impact by being able to potentially sell more gas.
Have we quantified that, or is it just top of the thumb for now?
I would only be able to quantify that if I were able to know how much gas the university would be burning. This capital request came about when we were unable to deliver the quantity of gas at the number of MCF per hour as that the university was requesting at the time because of system limitations. And because we don't have any kind of minimal volume commitment from the university, we together decided to seek external funding for it. And then IGU would simply have to commit to having enough LNG in storage to supply whatever the university might need at a time.
Thank you.
Okay, Jeff?
If they do get switched to an uninterruptible customer, isn't there a higher rate charge to that customer?
Potentially. Zach presents to the board every 2 years the cost of service calculation that is similar to what we would present if we were economically regulated by the RCA. There could be a higher charge out of becoming a firm customer. We could also determine that as a single customer, they do not pose as much demand on our system as reading the equivalent number of meters, for example, if we were to sell to residential customers. So we have university and the hospital, because they're the bigger customers, they have their own tariff that is not dependent upon, say, the large interruptible customer class.
I'm going to have a follow-up question in regards to the Aviva software. Oftentimes, there are software packages that you can pay for a term of free upgrades to the software package at a specific amount, or you can purchase the package that requires you to pay for additional updates. Does this Aviva system have that, or have we not upgraded the software until finally now we're forced to upgrade the server to now meet the higher level software package?
So the server that is, the problem we're really having is the servers are proving to start to be age out of their viable lifespan, and the current version of Aviva that we're operating on them cannot be loaded onto the new server platform. So that's what's driving behind it. The cost that's integrated with this includes 3 years of updates.
Okay.
And then there is an extended purchase amount written into that software where you can extend that coverage on an annual basis outside of those first 3 years.
Great. Thank you.
And Jack?
So during the cold snap this year, all four boilers were online?
Correct.
And were they keeping up?
They were keeping up. They were running about, 80-85% capacity. And then when the one boiler had an issue, the rest had to increase. George can talk more about that.
They were operating between about 77% and 83% full capacity for the four that we have. Mm-hmm. The issue that we ran into is when we had a fault on one of those boilers, the other three compensated for what was lacking, but they would hit an overfire rate where they were producing too high. So by the time we got the fourth one back up and running, the next one in sequence was wanting to turn off due to a high firing rate. So you were chasing the tail trying to get all four of them back online.
But that's just a controls issue, right?
Not necessarily a controls. It's their temperature monitored. So if they're running at 100% capacity, they have a time limit that they can operate at that before they over-temp and want to shut off.
Okay. So this boiler is strictly redundant, though, then? It's not there to pick up additional load that we already have?
It will be able to, be able to add additional load to the system. It's not strictly redundant.
Well, then, okay, so in my mind, there should be a boiler that is strictly redundant, that is not expected to turn on under any condition that we encounter for the future year. Because if it's part of the figurative part of the load, and it's not redundant. Because if you lose a redundant boiler is there, but if you lose a boiler entirely, you cannot use that boiler at all. And so, you talked about additional load, taking care of additional load and stuff like that, but it sounds to me like the four boilers are there for the load, and so if this is going to be truly redundant, then we're not planning for additional capacity.
So
okay, let's go to George and see if we get an answer to that. Because I don't necessarily agree with you, Jack, but I'm not an expert on it. So
the load that we were operating under at the time where we were having these issues was the highest that the utility's ever seen, mm-hmm. to where UAF was burning at the highest rate that their service line will support at 76 MCFH per hour. MCFH. There we go. And the hospital was also burning at above 45, which was maxing out the capacity of what we've ever sent out before. This would be a redundant boiler that would be available in the event that we have a fault on one of the other four.
Well,
those three were operating at about 77 to 83%. So they're not required for the base load, but they would be for a fault event.
Well, then I'm confused about the fact that they're not able to operate at 100% for very long.
I'd have to dive more into the programming side of it, but that's my understanding.
They say that's not resolvable.
Okay.
Let's say that's not resolvable. That's the way it's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
So can those four boilers operating in that sort of thing, do they have additional capacity for additional load?
Yes.
In the system? How much?
I would have to do some experiments.
10% or?
Probably 10% at least.
So we can go for 10% growth on the additional with the existing boilers?
Yes.
The issue that we've experienced this winter was lack of redundancy. Had all those four boilers continued operating, we would have needed more boilers to run the load. As we're looking at next winter and we're building the budget, we're assuming all things point to a warmer winter than this winter. And even with the additional customers that we're assuming we will get on the system, the budget that you're going to be presented is going to have less of a load compared to projected end of year this year. To be very, I thought George was going to use this opportunity, and to his credit, he did not. We argued back and forth about how many boilers. Operationally, he would love three. As we're, I'm trying to get him three, but out of additional funding that does not come from our own capital budget.
Gary.
Oh, you're going to give him three.
Three more.
Pardon my ignorance. Pardon my ignorance, but you folks are used to it. In our system, what does boiler do?
It's heating the glycol that's circulating through the shell and tube vaporizers. So it's what's actually boiling off the LNG to provide natural gas and bringing it to a temperature that's safe to put into the plastic pipelines.
So it's what comes out of the big tank and goes into a heating unit called a boiler?
No, it goes into a heat exchanger or a vaporizer, mm-hmm. where the cold side of that is the LNG and the hot side is the glycol from the boilers.
And when that happens, it turns into natural gas?
Yes. It boils into natural gas.
Well, thank you.
And Sherry, did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay, I know Derek did.
I just wanted to, I had a comment, but then you said three boilers, so we're going from four to one here. But did you want three more boilers? Is that what I heard correctly?
For the way the plant was originally sized and designed, if you stage up to operate more than the current vaporization that we do. So there's three vaporizers, one that's a redundant, two that are meant to operate to the full capacity of the site and what it was designed to produce. The boiler system and glycol system was designed to match those two vaporizers to full capacity. Currently, there was piping outlets included for seven boilers to be installed. Four of them were done, I can only assume for cost-saving measures, but there were placeholders in to have seven operating total. Part of this capital that we're requesting will pour the additional housekeeping pad to install the other two at some point in the future, but we would still be revisiting for more boilers and circulation pumps and everything else.
And then just one, kind of circling back to Jack's comments, I don't know if this is correct, but I was choosing based on that dialogue to decide that this fifth boiler was primarily a redundancy measure at this time with our current load, knowing that as our load increases, it's going to become less of a redundancy and just a capacity building measure, at which point in time, one, two, I don't know however long that's going to be, we're going to be back here purchasing another boiler. That's how I was, mm-hmm. the lens through which I was choosing to decide.
I think that's probably correct. What, did you want to purchase more boilers?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No.
Well, that's good, because you don't have enough money.
That's awesome.
Yes, Jeff.
I think this winter was a good opportunity for us to see just where we stand as far as capacity with our boilers, and I think this is a wise investment to go ahead and add a fifth one. In a perfect world, it'd be great to have six, because you could take off two of the vaporizers, give them a rest, and put the other two back on to extend their life. And but you know, that all comes down to capital availability. But I would definitely do whatever you can to extend the life of these boilers by bringing on boilers so that you're not chewing up the ones that you have, because you're forcing them at higher temperatures for longer periods of time than they're really designed for.
I think, you know, there's probably a lot of perfect solutions out there, and we're not going to reach one, but, you know, one of the things, and Jeff and Derek really haven't had an opportunity, but the staff has been running, you know, what I would call a shoestring budget for a long time. The board, you know, recognized that. We changed the way we handled the money coming in from grants to make sure that we could keep our price where it is. One of the things, and Gary led the charge on this last time, we are almost adamant that if we keep pricing ourselves up, we're going to price ourselves out. So it's a balancing act here. It's a tough balancing act, but you know, we're not going to have a Cadillac here.
Gas prices in North City of North Pole dropped because we removed the sales tax on sales there. So you have a little wiggle room out there.
Thank you. okay, anything else? Derek, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's all. That's all good.
Okay, cool. Let's do financial reports. Jack, do you have a financial report?
We need to vote.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could we vote on the motion made by Derek? Those in favor? Go ahead. You can call it roll.
Roll call vote?
Yeah.
Director Miller?
Yes.
Director Wilkins?
Yes.
Director Jacobson?
Yes.
Director Wall?
Yes.
Vice Chair Wilson?
Yes.
Chair Roberts?
Yes.
say it now, Jack.
Thank you. So I just want to start I'm on page 18, talking a little about cash on hand and marked up our securities. You can see that between the two, we've got $12.2 million between the two, and that's versus $8.8 million last month. So we've acquired another $4 million in, I'm going to call it cash. There's a good explanation there on the increase in and why we're so far over budget on cash in on hand. And just to expand on that a little bit, the credit due offset from Middle Fork is $100,000. The lower operating cost is $1.7 million in lower operating cost. In other words, that has allowed us to have $1.7 million additional cash. Additional cash sales add another $500,000 to that, and there's another $1 million that's cash sitting there to be paid for insurance, basically, which we haven't paid for yet. I don't think I asked why, and if I did, I don't remember getting an answer. Why is marketable securities so far over budget? It's $4.2 million over budget. Where did that money come from?
The excess cash that we've had, that we've received from partially from Middle Fork operating costs. So understand that the difference between the cash on hand and the budget of 2.3.
I understand that perfectly, and I've talked
right.
about that. What I don't understand is the 6.8 versus 2.6 in marketable securities.
Not versus 2.6. Is the difference?
Oh,
is
exceeded by 2.6.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So where did that 2.6 million come from?
So that's operating cash savings that we've, or the it's excess operating cash, along with the reimbursement from Middle Fork. So understand that that cash on hand, and I know I explained that, but that's mostly just a timing difference, because we not only insurance payment is sitting in there, we also have a large payment that was due to Harvest as well. So that is mostly due to a timing difference, which you see that in that last paragraph, the last sentence of that paragraph. So we've had excess cash that we've been able to transfer into that operating account due to...
Into the marketable securities?
Yes. Operating the credit. This is mostly this tie. This all goes all the way back to October, November, whenever we were receiving cheaper gas while also paying Middle Fork a higher rate. So we're finally recovering that cash that we were spending then. Sorry, that we were accruing. We've now received that. And so we received that all the way through some into January, mostly into February. By the end of February, we had excess cash we transferred into the investment account.
Okay, so you have an explanation for excess cash on hand. You're saying that that explanation for having excess cash on hand is the same reason that you have excess in marketable securities, but you
partially. So we have excess cash in general for three reasons. One, we've had we're doing well with our operating expenses, managing those.
That's $1.7 million, which comes right off the fee.
Yep. So we also received the $2 million from Middle Fork, so now we're up to $3.7 million.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the difference between that, about $2 million of that was transferred into the marketable securities.
Okay.
And the other difference is sitting up in there waiting to pay payables, $1 million for insurance and about $1.8 million for Harvest.
You know, the $2 million from Middle Fork, though,
was, since we're about even now, at the end of this period, we're about even now, should not be a reason why we're over budget. Because the budget would be evened by then.
No, the budget assumed we didn't actually start the Titan or the Norso plant until January. The budget assumed that we were going to start in October. So the savings from that gas, from cheaper gas that we purchased, is part of the reason why we're seeing savings here, along with the Middle Fork as well, finally being paid off in February. It's a combination of those three things. For that much cash. I'll talk to you about this later.
Okay. Then the other thing that I just wanted to point out is that in lines 34 through 38, we talk about some things that are over budget because Titan had to start up again. And just pointing out that the budget assumed it was going to be warm rather than operating. So, and it costs more to operate it than being warm. But going forward, the actual case is going to be cold, in which case then expenses should be less going forward than the budget because it was budgeted to be warm. So we should see some of that. Let's see.
Electricity is... Electricity and system gas are both part of the cost of goods sold. So the offsetting expenses, offsetting savings that we're going to have because Titan is in warm status wouldn't be in the cost of goods sold. It would be in other budget
operating
expenses.
Okay. But I'll see how that affects the comment.
Liquefaction expenses, staffing, maintenance.
I was just talking about electricity and system gas as well.
So, okay.
Right? Those two things, the going forward in the budget, those two items are going to be, in the budget, they are positive numbers. We are consuming in the budget electricity and system gas.
Not anymore.
I know that, but in the budget they were going to be there.
No.
Electricity and system gas are only expenses for Titan while Titan is producing LNG for us. In the budget we assumed Titan was going to stop producing LNG for us in October. In reality, Titan stopped producing LNG for us in December. But the budget does no longer assumes that there will be electricity or system gas
the budget,
going forward.
So it doesn't take electricity or system gas to keep it warm?
It does,
right.
But that's not a cost of goods sold item. It's an operational item.
I'm not talking about cost of goods sold. I'm just talking about those two paragraphs, not cost of goods sold paragraph.
Everything under line 24 is cost of goods sold comments. Line
24 to 39. Okay. We'll talk about that later too. Okay. So the I'm turning now to page 25. So everything here points to very good news. Some things have turned from red to green, and that is, first of all, the total sales. So, is now above budget by 0.04%, and the last month it was below budget by 0.6%. So, that has turned to green. Also, things that have turned from red to green are the cost of the transportation costs have gone from red to green. So transportation costs now are less than budgeted. and that the cost of sales, the total cost of sales, has gone from red to green, the budget, it was 0.7% above. Cost of sales were 0.7% above budget last month, and now they are 5.3% below budget. So, good move on that. Operating income is now 70.9% lower than the budget. Lower negative than the budget. And last month there was only 32.4%. And then EBITDA is 68.3%. In other words, our EBITDA is 68.3% higher than budget. Last month it was 24.7% higher budget. So positive moves all around there. And looking at the pie charts, the actual total cost per MCF year to date is 21.09 cents, whereas the budget year to date is 22.86, and so right now we're $1.80 predicted to be, or actual $1.80 below budget. Let's see, then looking at the next page of that, and the first two are 12-month trailing averages, and one is, the older one is, you know, essentially a year old. It's March 24 to March 25, and now March 25 to March 26 actually is less than that, which means that our 12-month average in a year has actually gone down, which is the fact that we can hold a steady like that in inflationary times is real positive. And then also our annual budget is 24.65, and we are now predicted to be $1.23 less than the annual budget by the end of the year. So that's good.
Okay, any questions for Jack?
I have questions on page 21. I sat and stared at this, and you were kind of talking about it before the cash. So you just mentioned $12 million.
This cash flow is not directly tied to the operating cash we have on hand.
Okay.
So this is cash that we've used in operations, and we reconcile it out to the net income that the operations has provided. Not necessarily trying to back into the $12 million that we were talking about earlier. You cannot do.
Yeah. Okay. There's no. Well, only quarterly do we have an actual balance sheet, income statement balance sheet.
Okay.
And quarterly, in which case then that's where they would show in the cash.
All right. So. Budgeted, we are $1.66 million in actual over in our accounts payable. That's also on page 21. So I was just wondering, of the cash we have on hand, how much is available versus how much is committed?
General, so let me think. For February, we were operating, since we had operating cash, we were operating about $2.5 million of available cash. Sorry, and I'm just talking about operating cash. That we can use for operating expenses that's not already tied to some type of payable.
I guess I don't quite understand that.
Okay. So our cash generally for the most part remains fairly steady. We try to keep it. This time of year our cash actually, we see it's kind of like, it goes right in line with our gas bills. our cash goes up in the wintertime and then slowly dips down. So we will, you'll see a more positive cash right now, and then as we get into the shoulder, or sorry, not the shoulder, but into the lag months of the summer, you'll start seeing our cash start to diminish, and it'll go below, usually it hangs usually below, right, between 1.5 and 2 million. You had asked why, what our cash is, taking out all expenses, it's sitting, it was sitting about 2.5.
Sure, you're good?
I'm good, thank you.
Great. At the finance committee meeting, I don't know if we need to spend a whole lot of time on it, but we did at the meeting on the positive loaf. And I was fascinated by that. And I think it's worth just a brief high level mention, unless it's too squirrely.
No, it's not. It's not. You brought it up, so.
It's on the next page.
So,
what do you call the next page?
Right? Well, I printed off our finance committee, so I'm not tracking with.
It's page 23 of the packet.
23.
Okay.
So, what Director Miller is referring to is the red number that is for unaccounted for gas, LOOF, lost and unaccounted for. So generally, unaccounted for gas is usually, it's a positive number, meaning gas that has gone somewhere in the system, whether it's to a customer's meter that might be leaking a little bit, which is
before
the meter, which is quite common, very little amount. Other could be venting from trailers. There's a whole plethora of reasons why we would say our distribution meter says we sold 1,000 MCF, but our meter reads that we come back from all of our customers, all of our boilers would say that we only actually used 99,000. And so that LOOF, that what we call LOOF, that 1,000 difference right there, is just something that is just usually vents up in the atmosphere that we don't have a direct meter read or can associate or tie it to either a sale or an internal usage. In this instance, this is a negative number, and we have seen this before. It is very uncommon. I don't have a great explanation on why we have it currently, other than we're tracking it and watching it. In the past, we've had positive LOOF whenever NSTAR's meter malfunctioned. So, one of the possibilities is that we are actually, in fact, receiving more gas from harvest than they realize. That's a working theory. But generally, you will not see a positive number. I know I was calling it positive because this is basically gas that we have made up out of thin air, so to speak. It's gas that is not known measurable, but it's gas that through our inventory reconciliation on our balances says that we have actually received an extra 6,000 MCF this month. You want to add anything to that?
No.
Okay.
Okay, Jerry, are you good now?
Yeah, I just wanted to watch Zach squirrel.
Okay, and does anybody have anything else on the financials?
Okay. I'm just relieved to see the situation with the trucking company get back into balance. That had me a little uptight for a little bit there.
We had it under
control. Okay. Well, then if you're happy, we're all happy.
Good.
Okay. Operation report. George, are you ready to take it?
Right? Absolutely. So it's been a pleasantly uneventful month for March, which after the long winter has been a welcome break. But we're gearing back up for construction season. We've got 64 service lines that are approved that we're working on getting site surveyed and permitted. We've been doing a lot of research into the downtown areas we're going to be installing. They're going to be messy, so all sorts of conflicting utilities and archaic infrastructure that nobody seems to know where is. So that'll be fun. We've had a great turnout on our seasonal employees that are returning. We've got 12 that are coming back. I believe Elena signed off her letters for those today. We've got 4 more open spots, but that should wrap up all of our seasonal hiring. And then our project manager has been working diligently on getting equipment repairs taken care of, Fusion equipment dialed in and ready to get going again. I think that's everything on the construction front. For operations, no lost time injuries, accidents, anything on that front. A slower month for turn-ons. We've only had 8 turn-ons. As such, distribution's been helping out a lot in the storage side. Strip and hard pack, removing snow from impoundments and getting things ready for spring breakup. So that's been a good step in the right direction. Task orders for summer distribution have been developed for leakage surveys, line patrols, valve inspections, meter proofing. So we're getting geared up to move forward with all the summer work that has to get done. The OQ manual was formalized and we sent that over to PHMSA. I received receipt today on that they confirmed and were satisfied with it. So that's good. Just got done doing the training on the new program with our internal staff. So they're going to be moving forward, revamping, and getting everybody geared up on that front. And then working with Zach on developing budget for everything on the operations and construction side. On the Titan front, since our last meeting, everything's been secured down that way. We did haul a couple loads of tools up here this way that would help out our operations on this front. And then the facility's been secured with new cameras and security down there. We did maintain the operation, or the plant manager, and a security and preparatory capacity down there. He's been working on shoring up some paperwork that was still built up, and some of that in his spare time down that way. So we should be moving the rest of the record keeping up this way here shortly. No large updates on the PHMSA front. It's been fairly quiet other than preparation for the audit that is scheduled for the end of September. And fairly quiet on the harvest front, other than a couple of pickups that they've had in production. But for the most part, we've come out of the end of March there with pretty good inventory levels. So nothing that's too alarming for me at this point.
Cool. Questions for George?
George, what is Fusion equipment?
So all of our pipelines are plastic pipelines. So instead of being welded, they get fused. So they can be either an electrofuse where you put a coupler on there and run electricity through it until it heats up enough to bind them together, or you'll actually take a heat plate and heat the end of them and then smush them together and the bead rolls back and they bond that way. It's an interesting setup because the joints actually wind up stronger than the pipe itself. So it's pretty cool to watch.
This is the equipment that does that?
Yes.
Up to what size?
We've got equipment to go up to 12 inch.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions?
Yeah. With the 64 service lines approved for construction, is there any coordination with Fast Planning, City of Fairbanks Public Works, or ADOT about any paving projects that are scheduled perhaps in those locations so that the timing could be where we get in there and install our connection and then they pave it versus they pave it, we go back and do the connection?
We monitor the DOT upcoming projects through their dashboard that they've put out within the last year and have monitored upcoming projects on that front. We weigh out them for system viability. We also coordinate with the City of Fairbanks each year. They have 2 larger upcoming projects, neither of which are particularly beneficial to us.
Okay.
But in the last 2 years, we've actually found that our installation cost is lower when we don't get on board with some of those repaving projects, just because they've started foisting off an unfair percentage of the paving costs onto our installation. 8th Avenue would be a prime example from this last year, where we went in and were in and out within 3 days, and they had that road closed down for, I think it was all of 3 months. And then turned around, and when we tried to buy into that project, they wanted $80,000 in paving, and our patches were about $1,800.
Overhead cost, man, they got you on that one.
Yeah, so we keep an eye on it to see if there's something that's viable. For large diameter, it's somewhat worthwhile, but for our smaller pipelines, we're better off to move in before they start their projects.
Sounds good.
They learned that from Jeff.
Okay, other questions? Okay, hearing none, General Manager's report.
I'll just skip, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll skip through through this. The report is here for you. I'll just mention a couple of things. Mayor Hopkins has resurfaced the Tiger Team meeting that was in the past successful in many community projects. The most notable, I believe, of which was the Eielson work and ensuring that that bringing F-35s to the community, ensuring that base doesn't close. And then now the topic for those Tiger Team meetings is going to be the Alaska LNG line and ensuring that our community is prepared for it and best benefits from it. So prepared for it in terms of making sure that people from Fairbanks are hired and contractors from Fairbanks get work, and we are prepared in terms of whatever housing needs might be. And then, of course, what is one of IGU's priorities is that the spur gets built and taxed in a way that does not introduce a lack of balance between the cost of gas in Anchorage and the cost of gas in Fairbanks, which is so much closer to North Slope.
So, excuse me. Do you know who's on that committee?
Yes. There's all kinds of entities. We have all of the three mayors regularly participate. You have unions, university, entities like the railroad, because they need to figure out where the laydown yards are going to be.
Three congressional delegations.
There have not been representatives of congressional delegations. I can mention that to Breyer. There are representatives of Doyon and Chamber and Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation. Is there anybody in particular you're thinking about that might be missing?
I was thinking about Steve Haggison.
Steve Haggison is not. I can suggest that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. School district, ADA. I think I mentioned everybody else. Okay. I had a meeting with the DEC commissioner and the Air Quality Division leadership. It is expected that the EPA is going to soon publish the Notice of Funding Opportunity for the next Targeted Airshed Grant. There has not been a Targeted Airshed Grant in the last couple of years, so with this year's addition, it is expected that Fairbanks North Star Borough will qualify for about $25 to $30 million. And as you might imagine, I have a high level of interest in additional funding for mainline extensions, in addition to being interested in being in the room for discussions about how the conversion dollars get allocated and how that program gets managed. I think we had a productive conversation about specific regions that are interested in continuing to develop natural gas main lines, and we have some homework to do on our end in order to figure out who in the community would switch to natural gas in order to be able to give DEC a prioritized list of regions they should consider in addition to dollar amounts associated with development in those specific areas. They did tell me, so the board is aware that $3 million was included in the most recent appropriations bill in the United States Congress. It got designated to the EPA, and eventually it's going to make its way to Interior Gas Utility.
I have been working the contacts at DEC to try to figure out where exactly the money is, how it's going to come to us, and what specific requirements it's going to have. So I received from them an update that EPA Region 10, which is what covers Alaska too, now sees that funding. DEC is trying to, quote, stay out of the way so that the funding does not flow through them, and that does not then create a requirement for them to take the 10% indirect. It might come to the borough for it to then get reallocated to IGU, because the borough is the entity that actually submitted the proposal and did the request for this funding. Or if we get so lucky, it will come to us directly. It is my current understanding, though this is not a promise, that it will come as a lump sum rather than a reimbursable grant. Depending on whether it comes to us or to the borough, we might still see it as a reimbursable grant. We're going to have our next update to the Fairbanks North Star Borough on April 16th. Okay. Well, we're going to try that.
So, I don't know if you all heard, but we're going to have an update to the North Star Borough on April 16th. I'm leaving April 15th, not back to the 22nd. If one of you would like to attend with the manager, that would be good. If not, she's expressed to me before that she thinks she can have it herself. So.
And is that at the 5:30 Finance Committee or the 6:30?
It's right after the Finance Committee, so it's we're reporting to the Committee of the Whole, but you never know how long the Finance Committee is going to take, so I usually show up at 5:30.
Okay.
Is that a volunteer, Jeff?
Maybe.
Thank you.
I'm flying back from visiting my 82-year-old sister, so we'll see what kind of condition I'm in.
No. All right. Okay.
Other than that, we're working on the budget, on the next year's budget. We will present it to the board at the May meeting. We're going to have it. We're going to try to have it in an approvable form at that meeting. However, if more debate or adjustments is necessary, we're going to then have the opportunity to regroup and bring it back to the board at the June meeting. I have some details on that, Mr. Chairman, that I can talk about in executive session if the board so wishes, and we're continuing to monitor developments on Fort Wainwright, and if the board desires, I have a very small update that I can share in the executive session, and that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Questions for the general manager?
Just a small point under LNG inventory. I think we should cross off million because it looks like we've gotten trillions of gallons from it.
Maybe that
closet didn't move. I don't think we have capacity.
No. Timing differences.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, Gary.
Thank you, Fort Wainwright. We had some discussion over a couple of months about getting some help from one of our lobbyists. I don't remember where we left that. And
we reached out to a couple lobbyists. Go ahead and tell us, Jordan. His name has just slipped my mind.
Mike Pulaski?
Yeah, Pulaski Fish.
We determined that we cannot afford a lobbyist of the caliber that would be necessary in order to have the ability to influence outcomes.
Yeah. But Pulaski wasn't available anyway. He didn't want the job. Mm-hmm. We're talking minimum 80 grand out of our reach right now. So, and you know, I guess, Gary, I think, you know, my feeling is, you know, knowing the military, knowing the situation, considering the current administration, there is no sense talking too much about closing down a coal-fired power plant. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree, and it's like pushing a rope, but then at the same time, this is the oldest coal-fired power plant in the universe, and has all the problems that come with it. But we'll continue to lean on it, and as we're doing, staying abreast of it. But I understand, and like I said, you can't push forward.
I had told Elena that, you know, the Wainwright has a coal-fired power plant with a utility or distribution system for that. That distribution system, Jack knows, is tremendously expensive to expand. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see new and additional buildings going on Wainwright that they individually take gas. And I think that's what we ought to keep our eyes open for.
We don't need to get into this right now, but do we have a sense that the failing plant out there, utility plant, is impeding the plus up of the Army's effort in the Arctic?
No.
Not yet. Okay. All right, thank you.
You don't have a paper yet?
No.
Okay. Jane, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you. My report's on page 34. We'll have a harvest issue that I'm going to be discussing a little further in executive session. The only other thing I did over the month beyond 10 of the board meeting was just to assist with a routine records request. So that's pretty much the extent of my activity. It's been pretty limited, you know, over the last month outside of the harvest issue, which hasn't been a whole lot of effort, too. Claims have been primarily handling that. So that's all I have. I'm happy if there's any questions.
Are you still planning on retiring?
I am. IG is the only client I have left. I wanted to make sure I saw this latest, this issue with harvest to a conclusion. I'd like to think that we're getting there. And then once that's done, we'll see where it goes from there. I was actually thinking about that on the way down here. My malpractice insurance renews in June, so that's kind of a natural time to say I'm going to get done or I'm going to go another year. So, but I want to make sure I committed to make sure we get this harvest dispute behind us before I do anything. So I'm still in that mode.
With only one client, don't you think your malpractice insurance should be pretty low?
It doesn't seem to change.
Yeah, what agent do you use? Okay.
I'll bring that to their attention.
Let's see. Request from director's request for information. Gary?
Thank you. I'd like 5 minutes of the board's time. And I'm not sure whether it's long in this category or comments that this would be for stewards. I want to get a feeling from the board on the subject, whether I should pursue it or we should pursue it. The people around this table are here for two reasons and only two reasons. The first is to fund and support a safe work environment that delivers natural gas to Interior Alaska. That's one. Without safety, we are nothing. The second one is, as we've been told, and I've been told on a number of occasions, you really only have one challenge, and that is to increase demand. Demand, demand, demand. So, and I don't think we're doing a very good job. We can open 8 taps or 12 taps or whatever, plus those on, and that's probably going to be the. Or we can think big, and we're not thinking big today. And I point ourselves to the GBEA. challenges that they're having. So I want to get a sense of this, the other six of us, and Elena and whomever, about what we should do. I would like to put in place a formal GBA strategy. I think that we are standing on the station, at the station. The GBA train is pulling up and is broken. It has to be fixed. And it's going to pull out of the station, and we're going to continue to stand on the platform. We're watching a football game, and only from the stands, nobody's asking us to help. Now, I say all this, it's been rolling around in my head, but it really has been brought home about over the last few months, but certainly the last couple of weeks when GBA has gone public and the newspaper picked up. I read this, and I'm just really disheartened that nowhere, we're like bastards at a family reunion. Nobody wants to talk to us, and we're not inserting ourselves in the conversation. We're not. We are intent today to pick up 8 people here and 12 people there, and occasional commercial customer. Excuse me. We need to focus on the big items, the big demand. Wainwright said it's not the moment. That certainly is needed. You read these articles, and you know what I read in these articles? People that are above their head, or certainly an organization that's above its head, and they don't know what to do. They are crying for help. And nowhere in here, with the exception of 3 words from this editorial, is the word gas even mentioned other than this pipeline dream. So, we are not part of the conversation, and we should be. So, back to my original question. I would like to put in place a GBA report every meeting, and it can be public, private, I don't really care. If we were to run as a normal corporation, we'd keep these things among ourselves, but I'm not worried about that at the moment. We need a GBA strategy. We need to monitor them. We need to have somebody at every meeting. We need to have a report back to this meeting to us about what GBA is doing. It just should be part of our ongoing effort to drive demand. So I told Jim what I was going to talk about today, and the purpose is to get a sense from you folks. Each one of you bring a perspective that I hope that we can roll out and decide, do we want to talk about it every quarter, every meeting, or don't we? I've said my piece. I think we should. I think ideas on how to structure it. And with that, I will just, it bothers me greatly that we have reached the point, we're going back to coal, okay, I can't do anything about that, but it bothers me greatly that one of the options they're talking about, honest to God they are talking about, is wind power out of Delta that operates 34% of the time. Cost that out. Solar panels that don't work 4 months out of the year. Cost that out in real dollars. They're actually looking at that and deciding that may be part of our electrical infrastructure moving forward. I don't know what to say about that other than that's about done. So I used up my 5 minutes that Jim gave me, and I'd like to throw it on the table, and we don't need to do it tonight. I'd like it, and I have people to think about. Obviously, I want to hear from Elena and everything. But I'd like to agenda item sometime in the future that we have a GBA strategy. Thank you.
Okay, well, Gary, you did call me this afternoon and talk to me about that. What you requested from me this afternoon was that IGU redistribute a study they did 6 months ago.
Thank you. I forgot about that. 18 months ago.
Yeah, and I guess I would not be in favor of a report every meeting. That's tasking the staff. And I think what if this board wants to do something about what we should do is we should take that report, look at it, and decide whether or not we want to bring the action of dealing with Golden Valley as a task that we collectively can task the staff. Personally, I don't know what Sherry was asked earlier tonight if she knew who got elected, and I think her answer was the information is not out yet. That board is tremendously grieved, and it is a shame. you can't disagree with Gary on what the hell are we doing with wind and what are we doing with solar, but nevertheless, you know, we're talking about the hearts and minds of people that don't necessarily think like I do. Okay, that's safe. And you know, we really need to, you know, collectively decide as a board if we want to take it on and how we want to take it on, because at $21, you got to admit we're not a bargain for. We're not a bargain for Golden Valley. I think, you know, if oil stays where it is, which it probably won't, you know, we might be a bargain. And I suspect we're a bargain against wind and solar. But, you know, nevertheless, we're going to have a hell of a job convincing that board, unless it made a significant change in membership, come on board with natural gas. So, go ahead, Sherry.
I'd just like to say for the record that wind and solar are alternative energy. They are not green energy.
Yeah, I agree. But nevertheless, they're trying to work it in. Well, let me back up. They're alternative energies in Fairbanks, Alaska, you know. So, you know, help me out. Wind doesn't usually blow very much, and the sun doesn't shine very much. So, go ahead.
Well, I appreciate Gary's comments. I'm curious. Are you suggesting a more like relationship building, dialogue, building a dialogue with GVA over the course of this next year, or are you suggesting a more forceful, maybe formal approach, inserting ourselves more aggressively? I don't know if I'm choosing my words. I'm curious about how do you tee this up? What is your envision in that regard?
The answer to your question is yes. I see one or two of us at every meeting with our little badge on, the security welcome, the tear gas utility. I see us writing letters to the editor type thing to call out what the GVA is headed for. I see us recognizing that sometimes no report is a report. I see us as being actively involved in the opportunity to secure GVA demand, whatever that takes. They are headed in the wrong direction, and we won't be able to turn that ship around. So all of Interior Alaska is going to be hurt by this inability to recognize recognize alternatives, one of which happens to be natural gas. And yes, we're here at 23, but this is what's happening, and pretty soon we're going to push on it. If we don't push on it, if we're not ready, and we've let the market outstrip us, shame on us.
Okay, well,
thank you.
I think you laid out your point clearly. Board decision. I don't know if the board wants to deal with it tonight or to move it to the next meeting, but you know, I certainly don't have any problem with it. Jack, you got any opinion?
Well, I don't see how we can possibly deal with it tonight. It's not on the agenda.
Okay. Good enough.
Matter of fact, this whole conversation wasn't on the agenda, and I almost, you know, raised objection because it was out of order, but that's fine.
Okay.
We let it go.
Well, then it would have been under comments.
Yeah, right. Under comments would have been the place for it.
Jeff, do you have something?
Yeah. Are we on director's request for IGU information? Is that where we are on the agenda? Mm-hmm. Okay, so this the study that was done that you referred to, is that going to be sent to us in the near future so we can have a chance to read it?
Is that the offer we've made GBEA for the pricing?
I think so.
That was a executive session item that can be sent by our attorney to the board via email.
If you don't want it to be, I mean, the board could decide to at least formally, if we want to.
Yeah.
You don't have to, just because it was considered once an executive session, it has to remain that way.
I don't see why it would have to be.
I think at that time it was we were talking about pricing and trying to be competitive and whatever. So
I would consider the pricing. I would consider our ability to offer different pricing to different levels of customers in the future as something that we should continue protecting under executive session.
Yeah. I didn't know exactly what that report was, because when I kind of following up with what Gary's comments were, when I was reading those statements about having rolling brownouts in the interior, it's like I'm sure a lot of residents would be willing to pay for a higher gas-fired generator than having a brownout. So my question is, since we know where GVA infrastructure is located, do we have connectivity to our gas line distribution where, in working in conjunction with GVA and grant funding, that they could have gas turbine generators that they could switch on versus the coal-fired ones versus the oil-fired ones? And you know, there's a cost to that, and the one out of North Pole that runs on naphthalene, but they could switch it over to natural gas, but there's a cost. So I'm just looking at some sort of collaboration where we are identifying possible solutions to work with GVA to help the community when we look at this energy crunch that's heading our way.
You know, I think that NAFTA contract is either gone or going to be gone. But you know, the guy that really knows a lot about this is Steve Higgins.
Yeah.
And it would, if we're going to have a discussion about this, it would probably be good to ask Steve to come back and address the board. And I'm sure he would. I think he would. Mm-hmm. So you know, that's what we ought to do. I'm assuming you're for moving it forward, putting it on the agenda.
Well, a discussion of, you know, we have an energy crisis. Sure. We do have potential to offset that if there is interest in working together, but we have to first identify what the needs are, what the options are, and
I'm trying to pull this out, Jeff, before Jack calls point of order.
I'm going to start chiming in, and we're going to keep on like this.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. Can we close this out and move it to the next meeting? Okay with everybody. Okay. Thank you. We are at the point of general manager's closing comments.
I don't have any.
That was...
My comments were going to be about the topic you just closed.
Okay. Well, good.
Okay.
IGU attorney.
No, thank you, sir.
Nothing. Directors.
No comment.
Okay. Gary, would you read your motion?
Do you want me to read this as is, or it just air call?
You can do it any way you want to.
Just the last.
Somebody will tell you you're wrong if you do it.
The last part of it where we also include adjourning the board meeting at the end of executive session has kind of tripped us up previously, right?
No, that's what we should
that's
do.
What we want?
Well, yeah, we want to do that before we adjourn.
I made it into
that.
One motion.
Yeah, but...
Let me ask a question about that. So, Derek's right. When we got to the end of our last executive session, I can't remember if it was a motion that could have been made or just a discussion that could have been had, but we closed it out.
Right.
So, can it be done another way?
Well, my recollection from last time is what happened is we adjourned this meeting before we did this motion. Is that what was we did wrong?
No,
last
we did it just like
that. Okay. No. Okay. But this motion should be that this meeting is adjourned at the conclusion of the executive committee meeting. That's what this motion needs to include, that this meeting is adjourned then.
Which it does.
Right.
Yeah, it does. But
I don't remember what the hang-up was last time.
But that's what happened last time, was that we had that same motion, but then we decided to take an action, and it was like, well, we just ended the meeting with the executive session, and now we're going to take an action. So
this will work if we don't have to take an action.
Can we leave this meeting intact and come back to it after the executive session?
Yes, you can.
Okay. And
then just recall the meeting and move to adjourn if you want to.
Okay.
If you want to leave the option open, you don't have to adjourn the meeting. It's just a convenience thing we've been doing.
Okay. So, yeah, leave it open. Leave this meeting open.
So just scratch the last sentence, and adjourn the board meeting and executive session.
I'm also going to suggest in between and adjourn, and absent an actionable item.
You could do that too. I just think for the listener out there, they need to know, so we don't have people hang up.
All right, I'll just strike that last.
Assuming there's anybody on
last sentence. Okay.
I move
that the board enter executive session to discuss matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of Interior Gas Utility, including business development, budget, and legal advice regarding contractual matters, to include the board of directors, general manager Elena Sutta, CFO Zach Damron, executive assistant Erica Lobrick, and attorney Zane Wilson.
Second. Moved and seconded. Okay. Without objection, we'll move into executive session. We're out of executive session. Is there any business we need to take care of in regular session? Gary?
I ran into Heather Thomas as I was coming in. Is she back in what position?
She's back. She's George's executive assistant. There's two things. Barack is a very good employee back and convinced George she needs an assistant.
Yeah, it's great to see her smiling face and for those that did get to work with her, the new board members. We were sorry to see her go and we're really glad to see her back. Thank you.
Okay. Well, hearing none, motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Moved and seconded. Without objection, we are adjourned.